So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review.
Today will be Fergal's last day in the dojo.
Kogashi-san makes us eggs every morning, gives us food every day, brings us sweets. He's like a dad.
Actually, I have a present for him. Will I get it from now?
Yeah.
I have a present for him, yeah. Kogashi-san. This is a gift.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for 8 years taking care.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Hi.
You have a hug.
Yeah.
Thank you. Then he just dumps it down on the side. Pretty emotional fella.
He's about to miss you.
Yeah, I'll miss him too.
I like seeing you emotional for a change because you're usually a dick.
Yeah, I know.
After years of living and working together, emotions amongst his fellow wrestlers are high.
Just to be able to come here and do what we've done throughout the years and form this bond that we have is... It's real. It's real.
Another pair of sunglasses there, pal? Can I borrow those for a while?
Now I can fucking talk.
Sleep on floors together and shit.
That ain't nothing.
It is review away time. John Pollock here alongside Wei Ting.
That's me.
How are you?
Pretty good, man.
Wei, are you a fan of the movie The Mighty Ducks?
I fucking love it.
The Disney classic.
D2, personally.
Yeah, fair enough. You don't go into any of the later numbers, do you? I think there were four of them.
Four?
It was something like that.
But without the original cast, one of those straight to DVD or straight to VHS.
The third one, I think, had some of them. I don't even know if there was a fourth one. I don't care. Do you ever go to the Tim Hortons right below our building?
Yep.
They really are the District 5 of Tim Hortons franchises. These people, when this Tim Hortons opened, it was clear that this was like an NHL expansion team where they're starting and... They're basically built on players that are not protected on waivers. And you got to build a team. And that's what this Tim Hortons was. It was the loose ends of the chain of Tim Hortons. And, I mean, getting orders wrong. But they reached a kind of okay period. But I've really noted that in the winter months, once it's really cold outside, a lot of people go to Tim Hortons during the day. And now frequently I'll be in line. And these people are just running around. They're like, you're waiting and waiting, and they're just lost. And as I'm here, just waiting for somebody to take my order, I look over, and I see in the little fryer where you put the bagels, this bagel on fire, and these flames are just coming up. And I was just like...
Flaming bagel, wow.
Yeah. And I was like, Jesus Christ, like, do I yell... Hey, look at that. And then it flipped underneath and the fire went out, but then smoke just burst out of everywhere.
Oh, man.
I mean, I walked over. I thought I was having a stroke based on what I was smelling. Still didn't deter me from ordering my own bagel from this crypt.
Wow.
But, man, this Tim Hortons way, they need their Emilio Estevez. They're,
yeah.
They're a little lost at this particular franchise, but I still go back.
Wow, yeah. I mean... It really is. I mean, and I don't think this is a a criticism of all Tim Hortons, actually. I went to a Tim Hortons up in Scarborough today. And I had great service. Excellent service.
And it's been maintained, even as they have expanded their menu. As I mean, they're very much like Pizza Pizza, where it's not their signature item anymore. I mean, you can buy anything at these places.
I had a red velvet muffin.
What?
Yeah.
I recently got the spicy Thai chicken soup from Tim Hortons.
That sounds weird.
It's good.
Spicy Thai chicken soup. That's just like pouring a bunch of leftovers in together and mixing it into a thing and calling it a thing. They're like three different things that don't really belong together.
But
we got the spicy can of shit. We got this Thai stuff. And we got this can of chicken noodle soup. What can we make of it?
Have you ever watched the show Chopped?
No.
That's what they do. They take random stuff and they make a great meal out of it. And that's what they do at Tim Hortons.
I guess. We've talked so much shit about this particular Tim Hortons downstairs in our undisclosed location. Actually, it's almost directly below us right now.
Well, they can't hear us, I don't think.
No. But it's, you know what? They're terrible Tim Hortons, but it's our Tim Hortons.
Exactly. Only we can knock it.
Yeah.
Well, how is the January month's going for you, Wei? This is usually a down month for people. It's kind of like this hangover from the holidays.
It's been good.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's been good. I mean, I think it's kind of arbitrary to expect anything different from...
What an analysis.
From last
month. What a
month.
Stupid question. How's January for you? I said nothing to ask you, so I was curious about January.
Well, let me ask you something. Okay. You're always the one with the questions.
No, you don't have a question.
No, I don't really. Let me think of one.
Let's go back to what we announced on Monday night. The newest, I guess not really a new show, but kind of a spinoff, Review and Impact is going to be continuing at liveaudiowrestling.com with our hosts, Nate Milton and Brian Mann. I think our first true spinoff of guests on the show that are now coming together for a weekly show.
Is that true? I mean, what about
pure guests? Like, we don't have any other show. I mean, all the other shows are involving, you know.
WH was a guest.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I guess you have. Yeah. Well, we got to put immediacy here.
Okay.
At the forefront.
I'm very excited. I'm very excited for Nate. I mean, first of all, I think you can't have a TNA review without TNA.
People were very upset last week when there was no Nate on the show. And I agree. We can't do Review and Impact without Nate. And with Friday nights and not airing in Canada, Wei wouldn't have cared if it aired on Tuesdays and they personally came to his office and performed Impact in front of him. I don't think he was going to continue.
No, don't get me wrong. Yeah, it definitely became a tough watch towards the end. But, I mean, I always enjoy talking about it. Like, I think, and a lot of people who listen to the show would always comment about, you know, often people, it was their favorite show of all the shows that we did, because no matter how bad the show is, there is always a lot to talk about in TNA. And I look forward to hearing Nate talk about it, and I'm very much looking forward to hearing Brian Mann talk about it, because I think he's always excellent on a lot of our shows. And here's a guy who, you know, actually probably attended more TNA live events than you and I combined.
Oh, definitely. He's gone to like three this year alone. I think that's more.
He had beer poured on him
by James Storm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean,
more than qualified for the job.
Huge in the hierarchy. Did you hear about his joke he made on Twitter that became a bit of a news item last week?
What's that?
He said...
I've had to unfollow him, by the way.
Oh, no.
Because I've had to unfollow everybody that I actually know in real life.
If I follow you in life, I will unfollow you on Twitter. It's the new motto of Wei Ting.
I've unfollowed you as well, John.
What?
Yeah, I've unfollowed.
Oh, that hurts.
Well, it shouldn't, because I unfollow everybody.
Court and Brian, that's one thing. But me...
I still follow at Law Radio.
Oh, well, that's
I only follow brands now. But no, it's nothing personal. It's just, I'm reluctantly, at this point, reluctantly unfollowing people. Just so the people that I actually don't want to follow don't get their feelings hurt.
Wow.
So, but at the same time, it's kind of beneficial because, like, I'm spending less time on the internet. It's also like made me less aware of what's going on.
Like, I feel you're making like the inroads towards some major spiritual journey in your life where one day you're just going to come in and say, I'm done with all of this stuff and I'm moving to Singapore.
No, I mean...
To find my voice.
Why Singapore?
I don't know, somewhere far off.
But I do have to say, I mean, you're a great tweeter, of course, but I think Brian Mann has one of the funniest wrestling tweeting accounts, and I think it's very underappreciated.
So he wrote on Twitter that, do you remember way back when they were doing the Daniel Bryan is a virgin storyline with the Bellas?
Yes, of course.
And they were both trying
That's how they met.
Bree
and Nikki.
And that's when Daniel was romantically linked to Gail Kim at the end of that whole thing. And Brian made a joke that the idea was that Daniel Bryan was going to become the first... he was going to become a positive gay character at the culmination of that storyline. So I guess a bunch of sites ran with this as a news story. And then Brian had to clarify that it was a joke he made on Twitter.
Oh, no. Jesus. That's...
So he's creating waves out there.
Yeah.
So you can catch him, folks, on Saturdays at liveaudiowrestling.com exclusively with Nate Milton chatting Impact. And I very much look forward to hearing them. I like listening to shows that are part of our network, but I'm not involved with. And I've got to say, taking that break from Impact, I found this is the best balance of shows I should be doing a week.
But you obviously still watch it.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'll watch it every week, but... watching it in time and then doing a show on Saturday was just not going to happen. Right. Especially in this this new deal with the UFC, my Saturdays are going to be much more busy than prior. And doing a show during the day on Impact, just not in the cards.
Not yet, but what if it becomes really amazing?
Well, I'm still going to be watching the show, but I wanted to... we're going to get to hear Nate and Brian each and every week. I look forward to it.
Cool.
Are you going to be giving up anything? You're still going to watch Raw?
Yeah, of course.
Are you going to be watching New Japan on Friday nights?
If we get it here.
Well, we don't get it here as of yet, but I'm sure you'll... Hey, listen, people in Canada, there is so much great wrestling out there. You just have to... You got to go through some hurdles to find it.
Well, maybe we'll watch it.
Like, all of this wrestling stuff, like, none of it's airing in Canada.
Yeah,
nothing.
That's true.
We get WWE.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's about it. And Ring of Honor.
So many people now don't even have TV. You know, I know, especially with like Chromecast and all that, people just like go online, which is terrible because there are great channels out there.
It's how Agnew now watches all his shows is with his new Chromecast that you bought him for Christmas.
I did. The one that you talked a ton of shit about.
I don't recollect having any shit to dispense about Chromecast. I use the Chromecast. I like the Chromecast.
You don't like the Chromecast.
Listen, there was a point where Fight Pass was not compatible with Chromecast. So when I would just send my page to the channel, it was choppy. It was just not great. And now it is perfect quality. It's incredible.
So basically, for those of you who didn't see our holiday gift exchange video, I mean...
And are you living under a rock? That thing's got over 2,000 views or so.
Yeah,
that's opening up Christmas presents.
How do you guys not follow every facet of our lives?
How dare you not?
So basically, John and Jay were over, this was before Christmas, and, you know, I loaded up the WWE Network on Chromecast while everybody was at my house, and at this point I had already bought Jay's Christmas present. I bought him a Chromecast, and I didn't tell him, of course, but then, you know, we're watching the Chromecast, and at one point, like...
This is a very controversial night in Review Away history.
John was like, Jay's like, oh, well, how are you streaming that thing? I said, oh, Chromecast. And then I guess Jay asked you, hey, John, you said it's not very good, right? You said it sucks, right? And John just...
Which I didn't say!
I'm sure you did.
I don't think you did.
Complain about it. And then John's just like, yeah, it's terrible. It's not good.
You're sensationalizing, though.
Anyway, and here I am, already having bought this Christmas present that I'm, you know, about to give to
My head was in another place. I was trying to preserve a friendship at that moment.
But afterwards, now John is just completely backpedaling. Now he loves it.
Listen, I use it. I do use it. But...
Yeah.
But remember when we were at your house one night and was it Metamorris we were watching on the Chromecast?
Yeah.
And it wasn't perfect. It was a little choppy. Would you not give me that? Because Metamoris, you just when you just cast the web page,
yeah.
you're not getting the perfect quality as opposed to a player like YouTube or like Fight Pass, where you've got the Chromecast button.
Yeah, the native streaming. Yeah,
network doesn't the network doesn't have Chromecast compatibility. Now on the player.
I find that it has a lot to do with, you know, how fast your computer is to how fast your
You can adjust the options.
Well, you're right. Absolutely. I think to be honest with you, like, this thing's been out for what, like a year and a half, 2 years now. I expected a lot more apps to be compatible with it. Like a lot more native apps. We're talking about Chromecast now. Again, honestly.
Well, we got a short documentary to chat. So
okay, but you know, I think it still has a long ways to go. But for $40, can't really go wrong.
So for those of you that might have Chromecast the recent NXT special and seen Finn Balor's debut that everyone was talking about, that might have been some people's introduction to the former Prince Devitt, which we are going to discuss on today's show with a documentary done by RTE2 out of Ireland, a major broadcaster there in Ireland. They were also the ones that did the documentary on Conor McGregor a couple of months back entitled Notorious, which I've not seen yet. But after watching this, I very much want to go watch it.
Do you know what RTE stands for?
No. What does it stand for?
Radio Telefice Aerion.
I was going to go with Right to Edit.
No. No, that's not
exercising their rights.
Radio Telefice Aerion. It is Ireland's national TV and radio broadcaster.
Now, why did you pick this documentary, Way? Of all the options you had out there, adamantly said, I want to watch this.
Well, because I had a lot of people tweet me about it. I'm someone who's personally not seen a lot of Prince Devitt or Finn Balor. And I wanted to learn more about him because from what I've seen, he seemed like a very interesting, unique persona in pro wrestling. And I think he's going to be a big player. So I heard, not only that, but, you know, the fact that I heard this was a well-done, very good professional wrestling documentary, that was more than enough. Plus, I didn't want to watch another three-hour pay-per-view.
The 50 minutes was a big selling feature of this documentary for you, wasn't it? I watched the thing in one sitting way. That's always a positive. That already means this is going to be no less than a 5 out of 10. Yeah. Guaranteed. Could be the worst documentary ever. Watching it in one sitting already passes.
Okay.
So that's cool. That's my note going into this. The production company was Ronin Films, and this was called Smack 'em Up.
Smack 'em up. Yeah.
Not a title that really fits with the subject matter.
What did you start the show with? What song?
It was. Oh, was it Du Hast?
No.
What was the song that started?
It was the Prodigy song.
Oh, I missed it. I noted most of the songs that they had, like the instrumental versions.
No, I was talking about Smack 'em Up, like Smack My Bitch Up.
Oh, I gotcha.
We'll edit all this out.
Terrible. This is all going in there.
All right, yeah, so, you know, another one of these UK documentaries where they use a lot of copywritten music.
I want to move to the UK for pure artistic reasons.
You can use
it. You know how much easier I feel this Bret Hart documentary would have been years ago if we did this in the UK?
Right, right.
Holy Christ, we could have just probably played his music.
I'll say, though, you know, it's not always necessarily a good thing. Sometimes it's a little too distracting, you know, to all of a sudden hear, like, a pop hit.
We found out that within a 50-minute documentary, the over-under on Rammstein songs is 2.
2, yeah.
You can go with 2. Sure. No more, no less. This is how you properly illustrate Fergal Devitt to your audience. So the whole synopsis of this was Devitt's final tour with New Japan a year ago as he was finishing up in New Japan with the Bullet Club and getting set to make the journey to America, signing a developmental deal with the WWE, which many people had anticipated was going to be happening, and that he would probably finish up around the Tokyo Dome or so. But instead, he stuck around for a few months later and then would finally wrap up at the Invasion Attack Show in April. And this was all leading up to that final tour and the final couple of shows that he would be working, including Ryusuke Taguchi on that Invasion Attack Show. And just kind of taking you a glimpse you don't typically get a whole lot out of, and that is behind the scenes at New Japan, backstage, and at the dojo, which I found to be really interesting footage, and just seeing all the foreigners that would congregate at the dojo, and seeing the relationship among all of these guys with Carl Anderson, Doc Gallows, Bad Luck Fale, all throughout this.
That was really, to me, the my favorite thing about this documentary was to, I mean, so often I think we, you know, especially in the West, we have such a mysterious opinion of what goes on in New Japan or like in Japanese wrestling in general. Like we, and I think overall we have such a reverence for it because the quality of the wrestling is so good there. So to actually be able to see this behind the scenes footage of what the New Japan Dojo looks like, what the hallways of Korakuen Hall and the Tokyo Dome look like was just really cool, especially to see it through the perspective of, you know, somebody that if you're watching this documentary, you're familiar with.
He outlines his feud with Taguchi. Of course, they were a team together as Apollo 55, and I love the way he described their breakup and into this huge feud at the time in the junior heavyweight division, where he stated that we seem to have a difference of opinion just in life, and that led to this turn on Taguchi. And then they go back and look at his upbringing from Bray in Ireland, and largely this unknown figure in his hometown when he'll go home that no one knows. He's this, you know, emerging star in Japan. He's a very popular pro wrestler. This is a guy that has a sponsorship deal with Armani Exchange. I mean, this guy was on billboards and stuff over in Japan.
That's so incredible to me. Like, you never get that in North America.
No, and that's also on top. Like, I don't know the extent to what this deal was, but I mean, that's money he had to leave on the table to go to the WWE. He's not taking that sponsorship with him. Might have a deal with Tap Out soon. With Tap Out.
What do you mean?
Have you not heard this story?
No, I haven't.
There's a strong rumor that Tap Out is going to be signing a sponsorship deal with the WWE to be their exclusive, like much like Reebok with the UFC.
Okay.
With Reebok now having that space, guys like Tap Out are shut out. So Tap Out is now going to the WWE.
And what is it, what's in it for? I guess they'll pay the WWE, but I mean, okay, that's cool. That's great.
They'll design probably different shirts, clothing.
Yeah.
God knows the WWE merchandise could use a fresh look.
Right, yeah, so
maybe they'll rebrand to Kick Out.
Yeah, it was, this part was just interesting because you get to actually see proof of how much of a fan he was as a kid.
This guy went to WWF New York.
Yeah.
That's an intense level for an Irish fan.
Yeah, he's just like a skinny guy, you know, probably not more than 13 to 14, is hanging out in front of WWF New York. Don't you have a photo of yourself like that?
From WWF New York?
Yeah, didn't you go to WWF New York?
No, I never went there.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
I thought you went with your friends.
No. I never went to WWF New York.
Okay.
We'll
edit this out too.
Nope. We'll leave your mistake in there. He was wearing a WCW replica tag title.
Wow.
Like, this guy was into it.
Maybe he found it at the flea market, you know? I don't see anybody just going and buying that particular title. I mean, my first choice would be obviously the WWF World Heavyweight title. If not, okay, the WWF tag team titles. I'm not going to buy the WCW tag team titles unless it was just, like, on sale.
Remember that Wrestle Reunion convention where we were asking the replica title sellers about what are big sellers? And they were noting, like, the Divas title sells. It's like everyone wants all the titles, and this one's different, and people like the Divas title. And that astounded me.
Yeah, yeah. Who are all of you guys out there buying Divas titles?
What do you
do with them? What do you actually hold them?
Do you put them on your wall or do you wear it around?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any friends who ever bought replica titles? Were they ever into that thing?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think we all know. I mean, Brayden has replica titles.
Wow, that's Brayden.
Does he have the Divas title?
I don't know. He's never shared that. He could.
Could.
He might. He does have a girlfriend now, so he has an incentive to buy it, I'm sure.
That's right. I mean, I think it's cool. I mean, I think they're a lot of money, absolutely. But, I mean, I have weird hobbies that cost a lot of money.
Is it cool?
I think it's kind of cool, yeah.
Is it cool to own one, or is it cool to walk around with one? Like, I never got the idea of walking around with a belt.
I would totally... I mean, to walk around with one at a show is totally cool. It's fine.
Mm.
I wouldn't walk around with one, going to the grocery store. That would be weird. But if you're at an event, yeah, what other excuse do you have to, you know, try to live out the fantasy? Okay, what's weirder, to own a replica title or to own a pair of underwear in the style of your favorite wrestler's trunks?
I think the underwear, there's a certain camp to it that's kind of funny.
Sure, the title.
You're also not parading around. I mean, no one's going to know you're wearing that as
Some people would parade around.
I'm sure there's going to be some wrestling shows where people are going to show up wearing that.
Russell Ruse?
Yes.
Yeah, from our friends at Barbershop Window.
Look at you working these plugs in.
I
just want to know if I should buy you a replica title next year for Christmas. Will that go on your wall with my other gifts I've gotten you? All these years, I've had one gift for you.
Depends on the title.
Actually, been worn.
Depends on the title. If you actually give me
old school Intercontinental Championship. Oh well, I guess not old school anymore. It's still the one
that'd
use
be cool.
Now.
My favorite though is the Winged Eagle one.
Yeah,
the bread title.
I think whichever one you were a fan as a kid growing up with, that's the title you look at.
Yeah. So maybe that's what he loved the WCW Tag Team Division. Maybe.
The Smoking Skull. I hated that thing.
I did too.
I hated not those customized belts.
The Brahma Bold. Bullshit title. Come on, man.
Can't say I'm a massive fan of the current one either, the big W.
No, but it's grown on me, you know.
Yeah.
As they all do.
See, I've been the opposite. You hated it when they first unveiled it, and I thought it was fine. And in time, I've grown to dislike it, and you've grown to accept it.
Yeah.
So, I'm the more optimistic one, but in the end, you prevail.
Yeah.
Okay, so this guy had a WCW title. He started training in 2000... And then we get to say hello to some of our old friends from Insane Championship Wrestling in Glasgow, Scotland. Mark Dallas just works his way into all of our reviews.
I'm glad we reviewed that documentary before doing this one.
Yes. I think they are doing...
Oh, they did a part two.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's what I thought.
Of the ICW
should probably review.
Sure.
Passionate fans, I will say.
Well, you know what? Just seeing the notoriety it's received in documentaries.
Oh, it's a
like
huge
this,
promotion at this point.
It really does feel like, you know, very much an ECW vibe emanating from all that.
So Devitt shows up to work an ICW show. We see a brief cameo from Lionheart, even asks him how his neck is. And then we hear from another guy, whose name I'm not aware of, who explains how he lost a testicle from a crotch spot.
Yeah, he explains that he was on the top turnbuckle and he fell and got crotched on the metal rod attaching the turnbuckle to the post.
Oh man.
And he described it, I believe, as like a Cadbury cream egg breaking in half.
I missed that specific description.
Yeah.
And then another man we're reintroduced to, Jack Jester, who tonight's job was to apply Devitt's body paint.
Right. Was he in the documentary?
He was the main guy they were grooming to be the champion,
who
had the father who wasn't the fan of pro wrestling.
Right, okay.
Jack Jester.
Yeah.
And then we got some highlights of ICW, including...
Jeez, this is footage I didn't
make the documentary.
No, this is not anything I'd expect to see in any... broadcast.
The first legit teabag I've ever seen in a pro wrestling match.
Maybe the first legit teabag I've ever seen in my life, period.
Yeah.
Okay, so if for those of you who haven't seen this, there's a wrestler who basically...
At first I thought this was highlights of the guy fucking up his testicle, but no, this was a separate scrotum story.
No, this was the spot in the match. So there's this... I forget his name. I forget the wrestler's name. I'm sorry.
Teabag.
He stands above a wrestler's head who's laying down, and he proceeds to pull apart the side of his trunks, revealing exactly one testicle, and then does the Rikishi sit down on the guy's head. And then in retaliation, the other guy, later on in the match, the guy who took the teabagging, goes up to the top rope, pulls his trunks aside, exposes exactly one testicle as well, and then proceeds to do the Rey Mysterio
seated senton.
I mean, wow! I'd never seen this before. It's amazing. It was amazing what you can. First of all, it was amazing that they were able to show this on TV. You know, my like sheltered North American eyes. I don't know if I could
RTE
handle
too,
it.
Man.
But I thought it was hilarious. I think it's stuff that, you know, obviously you can only get away with at a more adult themed show, and I think says a lot about, you know, who this audience is.
I'm gonna put ICW and Hood Slam on the to review list for 2015.
Done. Cool.
Have you read about Hood Slam?
No. What's that?
Oh, I'll send you some clips. Okay. That's a promotion that we have grossly overlooked for this kind of show.
Okay.
And then we hear from Mark Dallas explaining the stories they put together and why the matches in this promotion mean more because of that storytelling. And then one of many musical montages as we had this dubstep version of a song to Devitt's match. And already I enjoyed RTE2 much more than Destination America because the crowd was swearing with their chants and they did not censor them like Impact last week.
Mm-hmm.
Just
right.
Painful.
Yeah. You know, again, a very, very hot crowd here from ICW, and I think really a big contrast to Japanese crowds, who are also very hot, but obviously you never get these chants, or teabagging, even.
I'm imagining there's going to be some promotion in Japan that's going to just break the stereotypes people have of Japanese audiences.
Right, and they'll just encourage people to actually, like, shout poppies. Poppies.
Yeah. Though I don't watch a lot of DDT. I mean, they're kind of in that. They do a lot of, like, heavy comedy stuff, at least aspects of it that, you know,
yeah.
Wrestling with blow-up dolls and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Another to-review product.
Sure.
Out there.
Down for that.
Then we go to the gym with Devitt, where if you feel like you're in shape, you won't feel that way after watching this guy work out.
He says he puts in over
3 hours. Sorry.
3 hours.
3 hours.
Training a day. 3 hours. 1, 2, 3.
Well, if I was insulting last week with my Irish accent, you have just...
That's exactly what he said. 3 hours.
He talks about doing over... I wrote three here, but I... Over 3 hours of strength and conditioning as well as cardio. And they showed him right after this 5-minute stretch where this dude is so blown up. I wanted to see the actual 5 minutes of what 5 minutes got this man so blown up.
It looked like some, like, pretty intense, you know, like CrossFit type of cardio training.
How fast do you get blown up at jiu-jitsu?
Quick.
Do you remember
really
that
quick.
One day? I think it was one of my first 201 classes. And Elliot put us through something nuts. Where I thought I was going to just die.
Yeah.
And even you said, yeah, that was a lot.
Yeah, yeah. It was like something like, you know.
It like was like burpees, weren't it?
20 burpees, 20 squats, 20 sit-ups.
Oh.
And, I don't know. Yeah, something
God.
Crazy like that. You know, I find with a lot of that stuff, you just have, obviously you have to be like kind of physically there, but you have to be mentally prepared for it too. Like if you went in that day knowing that you're going to have to do that, you'd probably find it a bit easier than, you know, being, hey, do this right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you kind of have to mentally prepare.
I remember the first time I ever had to do those alligator crawls. This was years and years ago before I went to open mat. And the first time I had to do it, I had to do the whole length of the gym.
Yeah.
And I just was dead at the end of it. But then you start doing it on a daily basis.
Oh, yeah.
That's and like, your body is very smart. It just gets used to shit. As long as you're not an idiot to it.
Yeah, we're adaptive creatures.
Yes,
but it's like that with anything, you know, with doing podcasts, with working at Tim Hortons.
Everything is we are creatures of habit, and yeah. It's just developing those habits. Deep stuff. We had as did I mention that we had Duhast over this?
You mentioned that the over under was 2.
Yes.
So this was 1.
And then he talks about when he first started training at this gym, how they were sleeping in sleeping bags in the gym, and after his first day of training, not being able to move his neck the next day, and goes over his list of injuries over the years. And this was stunning, but not stunning.
Yeah, but it was like, it's such a deterrent to me, to anybody who wants to become a pro wrestler. He describes training as... You know, every time you hit the mat, it's like a whiplash effect. And I have all the respect in the world for anybody who's even attempted becoming a pro wrestler because it just seems like you put an unbelievable amount of stress on your body.
I can't remember who the first person to say this was, but I've heard it from enough wrestlers that, you know, taking just a basic bump is almost like the equivalent of being in a car accident with a car coming at you like 30 miles per hour.
Well, 30 miles per hour?
I don't know. Give or take.
I don't know about that.
Now listen, I'm quoting here.
Okay.
A random person.
But, you know...
The body is not necessarily designed
to
be doing this. That's the point I'm making here. Like, this is bad for your body long term.
Especially the frequency that it occurs in a... Not just, you know, a wrestling match itself, but, you know, training. So,
five.
These guys do it well. They get used to it.
Five concussions, separated his left shoulder 10 times, hyperextended his left elbow, broke his tailbone, broke his left wrist, bruised a kidney, ligament and torn cartilage in his knee that needed surgery, blasted eardrum, broken jaw. And then they talk about another guy they used to train with who broke his neck in training when his forehead hit his chest.
Mm.
Think of that.
Forehead hitting his chest.
I doubt he was a
chest.
Contortionist.
Yeah. That doesn't sound fun.
So, if this doesn't turn you off from pro wrestling, maybe this is an avenue you should explore.
Well, listen, but he also does talk about why he does it, why he bears with all those injuries, because... He talks about the high you get from being in the ring. He talks about how he can't sleep at night because he's thinking about how much fun he had the night before performing in front of the crowd. And he says he describes it as like a free drug. So it seems worth it.
He explains his desire to go to the WWE as a way to push himself out of his comfort zone and how he got involved with New Japan. He felt he was getting too stagnant in Ireland and just not progressing at the way he wanted to. So he took all his stuff, moved to California for 3 months when a spot opened up at the New Japan Dojo. And that's where he went over in 2006 at the age of 24 and just talks about it being this terrible dojo. And he was the young boy. He had to clean everyone's laundry, cook their food, take their bags. He was at the bottom. And
hey, what exactly, why did that start and what came of that, the New Japan Dojo in America?
Well, he had gone to the one in California, yeah. Which had started up, and that's where guys like Joe had been through, Danielson had been through, I believe even Punk had gone through there at some point in time, and it just wasn't sustainable and didn't last too long. But a lot of talented guys kind of got spotted there.
With the intention of bringing them over to Japan later?
Yes, okay. Yes. And that's when, in 06, he went over. So, I mean, this guy's been a constant in New Japan now for, you know, this was 8 years at the time when he finally left and kind of just rose up the ranks. They showed them working out at the dojo, including Sho Tanaka and Yohei Kamatsu.
This was the Japanese dojo. He actually...
Yeah, this is at the Japanese dojo we're now at. And I thought this was really cool to watch.
This was so cool, man.
Yeah, so you saw Tanaka and Kamatsu working out in the ring where Carl Anderson, Doc Gallows, and Devitt are watching over them.
You get to see Prince Devitt's room that he stays in Japan. And, I mean, you think, you know, okay, this guy performing in front of the Tokyo Dome, should be living in pretty sweet quarters.
Nope.
No, this was just some, like, little shitty closet. You know?
I think Mike Modest had a better living situation in Beyond the Mat at APW.
But it didn't seem like this guy minded at all, you know? Like, he's here to do a job, and he probably, you know, spent many, many, many years and hours just being here, living rent-free, and becoming a better wrestler. But it's just so cool because we've heard so much about this, you know, all these wrestlers hanging out, making food for one another, and then training to become wrestlers. And now to actually get to see a camera in there was really cool.
And gave a background on how they came up with Prince Devitt and said he wanted to go by his name of Fergal Devitt, but they found it too hard to pronunciate. And they ended up coming up with the idea of calling him King Devitt, but then believing he was too young to be a king. I love this.
I love the logic.
And he had to be Prince Devitt.
It's such basic, kind of silly logic, but, you know. Yeah.
Who's ever heard of a 24-year-old king? It's just not feasible.
No, it's not believable. We'll make him a prince. What country? What country is he a prince of?
It's the world.
Prince of the world. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The royal
family. Or the junior heavyweights.
Okay, well, I didn't know that, but good to know.
Maybe as they took him out of the junior heavyweight division and moved him into the heavyweight division towards the end of his run, that had he got to the top as the IWGP heavyweight champion, they would announce he is now King Devitt.
They could. I kind of like the sound of Prince, though. You know, it's interesting, though, that he also wanted to go by his real name, Fergal Devitt. You know, I think a lot of guys take the opportunity to, when they're becoming a pro wrestler, to make an alter ego. But this guy seemed to want to, you know, represent his heritage, I suppose.
Yeah. I like Fergal more than Ferg.
Ferg.
Ferg. It's like the short form of Ferg. Fergal.
A Ferg.
I had this place where I grew up.
That Fergie. Fergie.
Fergie. There was this bar by my house where I grew up called Ferg's Bar and Grill. Okay. And they promoted the fact that they have the third best chicken wings in the city. I was like, I found that such an odd promotional choice. Third best wings in the city.
It's better than being not on the list.
I remember it.
Yeah,
I can't tell you who the number one and two are, I knew number three was Ferg's.
Did they taste like the third best?
I don't think they were top 10.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
Okay. They lied.
They gave some background on the Bullet Club forming in 2013, and essentially what all of these guys have described is just having no restrictions in how they can go out, be themselves, and Gallows, who was one of the last guys to join the group, well, I guess before the Young Bucks, but joined Anderson, and one night they're going to the ring, and Carl Anderson is just yelling at fans to suck his cock.
Yeah.
And Gallows was just amazed. There are no restrictions here.
Well, because they they're probably not as adverse to, you know, the profanity as we are here, maybe because they don't understand.
They've since been told not to swear during entrances when they're being broadcast.
I could see that now because they're, you know, they're on broadcast.
Can you imagine, like,
America?
Japanese wrestlers coming to the WWE and they walk down on Raw and they're just
suck my cock.
Yeah, and someone's online just translating it for everybody.
That's so funny.
Oh, my God. They'd be fired.
Oh, I'd love that. But, yeah, like you mentioned, Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows are pretty much pretty prominently featured here as, you know, the two closest friends of Prince. The Prince.
They go. They were at the Road to Invasion attack show at Corcoran Hall with Devitt and the Bullet Club working their last tag together from April, just before the Invasion attack show. And he kind of gives a tour backstage of just showing that the first time he ever showed up at this building, it was like appearing at the TV set of a show he's been watching his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
We even got to see Suzuki Gun backstage before a show where they were doing press interviews after a match. And
yeah.
The Bullet, just seeing them behind the scenes, this was just really cool to see.
This was the coolest stuff for me to see, you know, just because I actually got a chance to actually visit Corcoran Hall.
Oh, like, really?
I
didn't know that.
In much the same fashion. Yeah, I was actually, it was on one of my trips to Tokyo, and I was close to the Tokyo Dome, and I just realized Corcoran Hall was, like, right attached to it. So I just walked up, and I had very much the same feeling, like this place that you've seen mm-hmm. on TV a lot, but never thought you'd be able to see on the other side of the world to just walk in there. And you kind of get a similar feeling just watching this footage.
So the Bullet Club won their match and then go backstage, and they're with this, I imagine, member of the press, and they put a bag over this guy's head and then point up their fingers like a gun to the dude's head.
Yeah, this was a little weird. It was like this group of grown men publicly humiliating this poor Japanese man. Like, it was like an S&M vibe with all this.
And then Devitt gives him some comments about Taguchi that will go in the newspaper and talk about how this guy helps them build up matches with quotes in the newspaper.
Do you think they have as much pressure in Japan to perform in their promos? You know, like, do they have people, like producers? Like, especially, you know, I'm talking about the Westerners who talk in English. Do you think they have producers who are there to... Yeah, probably not. They just tell them, hey, say something.
I think it's very... You know,
you say whatever they want. They have probably no one.
I think they know what programs they're in. They all have the instincts of how you're building stuff up, and they're not micromanaged. I think that's pretty clear here with the Bullet Club and the vibe they give you.
Yeah.
But they know their basic programs, and I think a lot of trust is given in the performers, and you get some of the best work out of these guys because you have that confidence in your performers to have that leeway, that you trust them to go out and build things.
But at the same time, do you think that...
I'm sure they're given direction, of course.
But do you think there's it's a little detrimental because they don't get the feedback that they might get in a North American promotion? You know, like if somebody's promo sucked, you know, they wouldn't be told that they suck.
Yeah, I mean, you watch a lot of this stuff and it's like, you know, define like a promo sucking. It's not like these guys are trying to remember all this stuff. It's conveying a message. And I think largely it's like if you get it across and you have business for the match and business is good, I don't think you're going to get too many complaints. And
like would Roman Reigns... I guess he wouldn't
suffering be, succotash.
He wouldn't say that in Japan.
Yeah, right after he blows the guy's head off.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Then we got another aspect of the Japanese scene, and that is the sponsors that would take the foreigners out for meals, and they bring a camera along here for the Bullet Club out, and Anderson estimates that sometimes $20,000 is dropped. They go to baseball games. There's unlimited beer and food. Gallows starts gargling with whiskey at the table, and then we go into chops.
This part was just, like, so weird to me because it just felt like they were, like, it felt like they were, like, a group of hot chicks that these guys were just, you know, really wanted to date and just wanted to be around. So they paid them, like, with all this free food and all this free beer. And here's, like, I forget if it was Gallows or Anderson who was just sitting there basically talking about how much they're spending right now right next to the guy who's paying for it. He's like, hey, come over here.
He doesn't know what he's saying.
We're probably spending $20,000 of this guy's money right now. He just wants to hang out with us while the guy's sitting right next to him. So this is so strange, but a lot of fun to watch.
If you ever wonder why these guys will probably never go to WWE, this scene was
Yeah, why would anyone ever give up this gig? You get to wrestle with the best people, best wrestlers in the world. It's you know, at this point, it's great national exposure to be attached to this brand. And you get treated to free food and drinks from rich Japanese people.
You get time off in between tours.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great life if you can swing it in New Japan. I mean, they're not as big in Japan as WWE is in the U.S., but my God, the quality of life.
No.
From the top down, just seems head and shoulders above your average WWE performer.
At this point, though, you do have to be very good to make it.
Certainly. There's a high standard that's been created and has existed. And then they move on to the focus being the final match with Taguchi at Invasion Attack. For whatever reason, they said it was taking place at the Tokyo Dome. It was Sumo Hall that this show took place in, but I guess some creative liberties were taken. And it's pretty much... Devitt kind of saying goodbye to all his friends. They go back to the dojo. Devitt talks about buying Carl Anderson some shoes the first time he ever came home from a tour in Japan. And Anderson's saying, well, now that he's going to WWE, maybe he can buy me a house. And then Gallows talks about how Devitt has lots of crossover appeal. And Fale getting very emotional here, talking about Devitt. And then Anderson starts to tear up as well as they note how this bond is very much real between all of these foreigners in New Japan. I thought this was probably the best scene in the whole documentary where these grown men are just brought to tears here because one of their best friends is leaving. And it's the end of a long relationship here with Devitt and New Japan.
And you get to see, you know, again, a lot of Luke Gallows' personality here, like we've seen in a lot of other docs and podcasts lately. And he and Anderson are both just, like, fucking hilarious, you know. And Devitt, his relationship to the two of them, he seems like the more straight-laced guy. But you have, you know, the two funny big guy best friends in Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows who are very funny and throughout this whole thing. My favorite part, though, about this whole segment was... There's this guy in the house that...
Cook?
Yeah, always, like, would cook for them and would basically take care of them. And he's just, like, kind of this big, tall, completely stoic, older Japanese man. And so Devitt's like, I forget his name. But, like, Devitt just says, I bought a present for him. Should I give it to him now? And so Devitt, like, very quietly goes up and says, like, whatever, son, I bought you a gift. And he hands it to him, both hands, very politely, bows. The guy stops cooking for a second and says, oh, thank you, and bows to him. And then you know, we got
he just tosses it aside.
Wait. But before that, like, we got a cut to the next shot, and I could only assume that there was just a longer moment of awkward silence between the two of them that had to be edited out. But they fucking awkwardly hug. And they're only hugging because, you know, somebody in the background was shouting, hey, you guys should hug. But, like, you know, like, Asians just aren't big huggers, man. We don't just do that shit. Like, we get a gift. I mean, I guess I'm different, but, like...
You've never hugged me.
I've never hugged you. I don't know if I ever will.
Sure this guy would just hang this gift up on a wall and never use it.
But, you know, like, Devitt gives a gift to this guy, and you expect the dude to react big. Oh, thank you. Open it up, give him a big hug and a big thanks.
I wanted to see what was in this thing.
And then, like, he gives Devitt this super awkward hug. And, I mean, this is a guy he's known for 8 years. It's not just, like, you know, just some guy he spent the summer with. And then the guy just dumps the present on the table, and Devitt just, like, kind of jokes about that and laughs. So it was, like, it was a very Lost in Translation type of scene.
As we go to the show, he's talking to these two women and showing them something on his phone, and I didn't understand what he was doing until we realize he's showing the design he wants for his body paint.
Mm-hmm.
And these two women, they were a step above Jack Jester.
Oh, yeah. This was, I'll say, yeah. This was the part that I really wanted to see, too. The people responsible for airbrushing him. I mean, the artists, you know, let's be honest here, the really talented artists that are responsible for a lot of the entrances that we've seen him do.
Yeah, this was really cool. They showed, like, a sped-up version from beginning to the end, and who knows how long this took to apply altogether. And then at the end, I mean, this just... looked incredible, and this was something, especially when he finally turned heel and I think really became a complete character and performer by extension, he started introducing this, and this was just something so out of the box, but really worked well.
Yes, and you know, just even seeing that, seeing him pull it off now in NXT was a big thing, and it makes me really wonder if how much of this do you think they'll keep this exact type of entrance for the WWE?
I think for big shows he'll do. I like the fact he doesn't do it every week.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to see afterwards. I want to see how they get this stuff off afterwards and how long of a process that is.
Probably just wipes it off. I wonder if he'll be able to get away with a lot of the comic book paint or just a lot of like the copyrighted
characters.
Oh, and
directly copying them. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. We went through a montage of the match with Taguchi done to Sale. And this was the match where it wasn't really illustrated that well, but Devitt turned face in this match, turning on the Bucks after they interfered on his behalf, and then losing from the Dodon by Taguchi. And then afterwards, the two former partners shake hands, and Devitt leaves, and that was his send-off in New Japan. And then Devitt explains later that the unofficial stipulation for the match was that the loser would leave town, and people understood that it was... the promotion was not big enough for the two of them, and then said that this is not an end, just a new beginning. And then we cut to a song by the Mamas and the Papas.
Dream a Little Dream of Me. Was that it?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. He celebrates the end of his 8-year tenure. Yeah.
And then it just finished off with another montage. They love their montages in this documentary. We got another one to Power as... He worked another ICW show and just finishing up some indie dates in Europe before he would head off to the WWE and a closing scene with the locker room emptying for the ICW show, nearly making Devitt cry as they gave him a big send-off. And then the narrator concludes that he made it to the WWE as the credits go over another Rammstein song.
He's visibly emotional, especially, you know, when he leaves that... that last New Japan match, and he describes it. I love, you know, how he talked about leaving as, like, he says it's like the same feeling as breaking up with 10,000 girlfriends at the same time.
Oh, that can be rough.
Yeah. Also probably not healthy. I really enjoyed this. I really liked this documentary. I thought it was a really, I thought it was a unique take on, for a pro wrestling documentary because it was a, this guy is a European talent. I think we've seen so many stories from American and Canadian stars, but this guy is a guy brought up from a different culture, and he's also a guy that was, you know, made his name in a different culture in Japan. So completely, you know, skipped North America, which is, I think, you know, the territory you and I both know the best. But really interesting. I loved getting to see a lot of the behind-the-scenes footage of Japanese wrestling, places like the Dojo and Korakuen Hall. And I think it also really managed to capture the camaraderie between himself and a lot of his Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows while on tour, as well as the relationship he has with these fans that are just so, like, there are points where, like, these fans are just, like, giving him gifts, and it's just a different type of...
Felt like a major star. Yeah. That's how he came across in this documentary.
Right. But, yeah, it just felt like it just seems like the fans... in Japan have different relationships with these celebrities as, like, fans in North America do with our celebrities.
Yeah, I just thought this was a great piece on Prince Devitt. I wish something like this could almost air on the WWE Network.
Oh, yeah.
And this, you watch this, and this guy feels like a gigantic star coming in.
You can't watch this and not be really excited for him to debut in the WWE. I mean, that ultimately is sort of the culmination of this documentary, is that scene when he finally walks through that curtain. You know, I hope they treat him well and, you know.
A year from now, he'll be on the main roster as Lucky Charms, I bet. That's what we can look forward
as,
to.
As the new Hornswoggle.
Yeah, or yeah. God knows what. We'll find out, but I love this documentary. I thought a great pick by you, Mr. Ting. I give this 9 out of 10.
Yeah, I give it 9, too. I mean, my only complaint, if you believe this coming from me, is that at 50 minutes, it felt a little short and a little rushed at times.
You want to watch more?
This could have definitely been like a good solid 90 minutes, but I'm sure for TV time that they cut it down to 50.
Yeah, so you can check that out. I'm sure you can find it online. It's Smack 'Em Up, the RTE2 documentary on Fergal Prince Devitt. And we'll head over to the Law message board now, see what you folks had to say about this documentary. And we start off with Bruce from Vancouver. I thought this was a great, if brief, look at one man's trajectory to the WWE. I'm guessing that the tone and style of the film worked for non-wrestling fans in Ireland who happened to flip over to this randomly. And it certainly doesn't hurt that Devitt is rather charming and, let's be frank, pretty easy on the eyes. I hadn't realized that he'd logged a full 8 years in Japan, no short spell at all, and the camaraderie between him and the rest of the Bullet Club made for compelling enough emotional core to the story. While obviously using the ICW New Japan footage wouldn't be possible, I'd love for the WWE to produce something similar to this when he moves up to the main roster. There's value in pulling the curtain aside a bit and letting casual fans know that guys like him and Hideo Itami have long and storied backgrounds as legitimate international sensations, yet still elected to give it up for a crack at the big time. 8 chops to eager fans' chests out of 10.
Thank you for that. We go to Ronaldo from Milan, who says, a simple, honest, yet unspectacular view of one of tomorrow's stars I knew nothing about prior to his debut on NXT. Of course, you get no Jake Roberts pissing in a bucket in this documentary, and unless you really are passionate about Japanese wrestling, you won't understand the camaraderie and respect this country shows to gaijins. But I would have liked to have seen more footage on the New Japan Dojo and the inner workings of it. Japanese people have this fascination with gaijin wrestlers that is both scary and enviable at the same time. Bruiser Brody used to beat the shit out of people coming to the ring, and the more he did, the more Japanese people loved him. On a side note, I still have to decide which language I get the less. Irish or Japanese? Glad Mark Dallas could book his way into another edition of Review Away. Hope he doesn't spend all the money at the pub this time, too.
Sugar Shane from Texas, I thought this documentary was very telling in that not only do I have tons more respect for Devitt, but it demonstrated what he, as well as many others, leave behind for WWE. It was interesting and funny seeing the sponsor and his friends, plus seeing more behind-the-scenes stuff with the Bullet Club was very cool.
Martin from Wexford, Ireland. Though RTE Ireland's state broadcaster gets heavily criticized for the standard of their content, its documentary series Reality Bites has proven to be well worth the license fee. The previous Conor McGregor documentary, along with the Fergal Devitt documentary, were both excellent. What I found very interesting about Fergal Devitt is that how unknown he is here in Ireland, where he can walk around his hometown in Bray without anybody hardly knowing him, while in Japan he seemingly can't go anywhere without fans approaching him. My cousin used to go to the same gym as Devitt in Bray, and while he knew he was nobody else, Now while he knew who he was, nobody else looked twice at him. I just hope that the WWE know what they have. This guy has star written all over him, from his look to his amazing ring work. From the documentary, I took away that the guy is very down to earth, and you imagine that he would not give the office much trouble, which is what they want. More stuff like this is required on the WWE Network, and with Ireland and UK premiering the network soon, it would make sense if WWE got the rights to show this on their network.
That's right. The network debuts this Monday in the UK and Ireland. So maybe next week, if people get the network, they can let us know their thoughts on the big reveal. Christian Small writes, a really nice little documentary. Felt like everyone was being themselves and weren't acting, especially since listening to Talk and Shop and hearing Doc and Carl being like that all the time. Devitt came off really well, and it showed just how much he was leaving behind to go to the WWE. His reasons for leaving were also very honest, I thought. This documentary is even better, in my view, seeing just how well Devitt has transitioned to the WWE and NXT.
We go to G Hall, who says, I was looking forward to watching this, and it certainly did deliver. I felt like it was a great peek into both the ICW and New Japan Pro Wrestling worlds. The testicle moves of the ICW was a bit of what the fuck, but probably just because it was totally unexpected. Otherwise, I really enjoyed watching his interaction with the fellows in the Bullet Club, easily one of the better docs I've seen in a while.
Farouz from Malaysia. This was a great snapshot documentary that can be a primer for anyone who wants to know about who Fergal Devitt was before coming to the WWE. I would prefer more talking heads, though, especially from New Japan, such as Gato and Shinsuke Nakamura, to further emphasize why he was a huge star in Japan. There were also some interesting tidbits within this documentary, such as the testicle moves in ICW, that old reporter guy hanging backstage in New Japan, as well as the dojo culture in Japanese wrestling.
Martin from London, finally, we go to, he says, having spent some time before indie shows with Devitt, I know his easygoing, simple personality really well, and this documentary did a good job in portraying that to new fans. You get a sense of how hard he works to prepare for tours, an idea of how effective he is at the Performance Center. I enjoyed the relationship he had with Doc Gallows and Carl Anderson, that they were real friends and not just guys put together in a stable. The sponsor's dinner scene was hilarious, and I popped seeing Zack Sabre Jr. there, albeit uncredited. I only had one issue, the documentary claiming that Devitt's final New Japan match took place at the Tokyo Dome. They even showed the exterior of the Tokyo Dome before the clips of the match with Ryusuke Taguchi. Was there an issue with Sumo Hall or something? Regardless, it was a fun match, and I'll give it 8 Paul London testicles out of 10.
Oh, is that who it was?
Oh, I didn't even notice it was Paul London. Probably was. All right. Well, we're going to wrap things up. I want to thank everyone for tuning in here. Now, next week on the show, it is Royal Rumble time. And Wei, I have gone to the extent of writing down the Royal Rumbles we have reviewed and have not reviewed.
Okay.
And you, do you want to pick?
No, you pick one. I picked last week.
Why don't you pick a number between 1 and 15? Because there are roughly 15 Rumbles, if my numbers are correct, that we have not reviewed. Not reviewed.
Okay, and they're not corresponding to the year, are they? Like, it's not chronological, right, the way you wrote it?
Well, it is, but so there's big gaps of ones we have reviewed.
So if I said 14, are you going to pick the last, like, second last one? Second latest one?
Yeah.
Okay, well, then that's not really random, is it?
Well, what era would you like to review? You know what? I'm going to...
You got to shuffle them.
Okay. I'm going to randomly number these, okay?
All right.
I get the impression you don't want to review any from the past 5 years.
Yeah, no.
Okay, so we'll cut those out. So we're talking a time frame of 1989 through 2006, okay?
Okay.
And I'm going to randomly number these. And then Wei is going to pick. Okay, 1 through 9. Are
one
the numbers
through nine,
and they're all random? Okay, right. Of these 9 Rumbles, we have not reviewed in the past, and that will be our choice for next week.
Okay, how many people were in the Full House?
Well, it was full. We had Danny, DJ, Stephanie, Michelle. Does Michelle count as one or two?
It's one. One. Okay. How many characters?
Joey, Rebecca, the twins.
I'm so sorry. Start from the beginning.
Okay.
Well, we got the three.
Danny, DJ, Stephanie, Michelle.
We got the three girls.
Yep.
We got the three
guys.
Men.
Rebecca.
Rebecca.
And the twins, right?
Twins. All right. So
nine. That would mean we are going to review the 1995 Royal Rumble from Tampa, Florida.
Perfect.
Featuring Pamela Anderson.
We arrived at that perfectly.
Okay, so 1995 Royal Rumble will be our review for next week. And I also want to make mention, because I have been constantly tweeted by people about where they can sign up for the Royal Rumble pool. You see that way? The very last tweet I've received. Can you tell me again, where this site is? RoyalRumble.info is where you go. Pretty easy website address. That is where you can submit for free all of your picks in the various categories for our Royal Rumble pool. You have until Way's pulling up the site. He will let us know when the deadline is. I believe it's the day of the show. And then we'll be announcing the winner the night after the Royal Rumble on Review of Raw, January 26th. There's multiple categories. You get to pick who's going to be in the longest, most eliminations, tons of different categories. So go to royalrumble.info. You have until January the 25th to submit. And once again, it's completely free. And we'll be sending a prize to the winner. And this has been, I think this is the biggest Royal Rumble pool we have done. And this website, Chris Engler did a terrific job on it.
I can't believe he found, he booked the URL, royalrumble.info.
Listen, Chris is on top of stuff, man.
I feel like we should do more with this than just a pool. We should try to make money off of this.
But this isn't about money, Mr. Ting.
We should try to confuse people into thinking this is the official site for the Royal Rumble.
It's going to take place, the deadline is 3 p.m. Eastern on Sunday, January 25th. And all you have to do is submit your name and email address, and then go through all the different categories and submit your picks. And that's that. RoyalRumble.info. And finally, one final announcement to make in Review Away Land is that we are very close to finalizing our live Review Away podcast for WrestleMania weekend. It is going to happen.
Wow.
We are definitely going to be there, and we are finalizing. We have taken bids from many different outlets that want to host the live Review Away podcast. And it's like the Olympic process, where just have to decide what is going to be the host venue.
We've spoken to all the heads of the committees. We've seen all their presentations.
Yes, they have taken us out for dinners, for baseball games, endless amounts of beer. We have chopped them. The sponsors have been great so far, and now we have to make the ultimate decision. So I expect an announcement shortly, but it will be taking place on the day of WrestleMania, Sunday, March 29th, tentatively scheduled for noon. Venue, TBA. Is that good?
That's great.
I've had people asking. If, as soon as we know the day, we're also going to be putting up a Facebook page, because we do want to know a rough estimate of numbers. We had a very good turnout last year.
Yeah, excellent turnout.
So I feel we've set the bar very high, Way. I want to... Equal.
Lower the bar.
No. I say I want to equal what we did last year.
Yeah. I hope
you bring your A game this year. I'm going to try and not be sick the day of our live show. I was a mess last year.
You were fine.
My throat was gone. It was in rough shape from the day prior.
Right, yeah. No, I look forward to that. I mean, it was my highlight of last year.
It was great. New Orleans. This time we will be in Santa Clara, California.
What's there?
WrestleMania. That's what's there.
Okay. What's this? Is it where the 49ers play?
We're about 15 minutes from there.
So what's the stadium?
Levi's Stadium.
Which is where? What team?
The 49ers.
Oh, okay.
Play.
So that's exactly where it is.
Well, that's where WrestleMania is.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Oh, you're talking about the hotel. Yeah. Oh, we'll cut this out.
No, it's all there.
No.
We're going to get on out of here. 1995 Royal Rumble is our review for next week. Well, how do we end this show? I feel we ended on such a high last week with Tony Schiavone.
Oh, boy. You know what? You're the master. Of all the people, wondering who does all the editing on these shows, it's John Pollock, or lack thereof, lack of editing.
I just was screwing around with stuff last week, and that was the end result.
That was hilarious.
There were no lightning bolts on this documentary. I don't think we can really replicate it accurately.
No.
Is there anything you want to go out with? A speech? A word?
Oh, okay. So we're not limiting ourselves to music now.
I just feel the song.
Yeah.
It's like, typically when I put the song in now, I leave something at the end. So if you do listen through, you get something at the
right.
end. But I don't know how many people are gripped to 2 minutes of a song. I kind of shorten it now.
why don't we go out with some Irish person talking?
Goodbye.
Nah, there'll never be something like it. Not for as long as the Queen makes
the
video.
This is the real legend, James. You're baldy bollocks.
So I don't want to be better than any Queen. I want to be better than James Queen.
I have to tomorrow win for the sake of not just myself, for the sake of our people.
But the Quinns, the Collinses, the Jaces, we're all cousins. And I think it's a pity with the children that's grown into that life.
Now, Clement Donat wants you to go out and fight him and take the head off his body.
Two families don't like each other. This is the safest way to sort things out.